Hey folks, it's Jesse, co-host of your favorite digital podcast in a digital basement. We just wanted to thank our patrons Craig and Goldie for their generous support of whatever it is we do here. If you would like to support us, please consider visiting patreon.com/Connor's Basement to make a donation today.
Yeah, so I mean, ever since I got the vaccine, you know, arm's been like a little black, bruise, some necrosis around the injection site, but man, 5G has been amazing.
Jesse, who are you talking to?
Oh, are we starting the recording now? Oh, I've had the mic running and I've just been rambling into the microphone.
What do you think? Is this like the people's key or something like that?
If I was at
come
the
on,
level of
that was
Bright,
good.
It was good. And if I was at the level of Bright Eyes fan that you are, I would have just started. I would have started talking. What do you talk about, Tesla? What are you talking about, Einstein?
It's the world of creation, vibrating strings between the sounds. Oh man, no! I mean, we are here to talk about an album that's relatively similar. You know, I guess you could say the People's Key is sort of a spiritual successor, no pun intended, to Digital Ash, a Digital Urn, which this beautiful episode is going to be about.
Yeah, I think a lot of I don't know. I always associate this album as like, and we'll get into it as we dive in, but this is like Bright Eyes' big push into the 21st century, really innovating with electronic sound, that chip, that crunchy chip tune.
I would have loved to hear some Bright Eyes chip tune. That would be so interesting to hear Connor's lyrics like on top of, I don't know, some like crazy fast, just like to get. I guess that's kind of Desapercitos, but like, you'd still need the chiptune aspect of it, not just being like fast and aggressive.
Somebody's got to like dismantle an old Nintendo and just run Desapercitos through it. That's how that works, right? You could just like plug music into an old video game system and you just make new music.
I'm pretty sure that's how that works. Yeah, so like you're saying, like Digital Ash is a completely different foray for Bright Eyes up until this point. Probably you could say that there are tracks that were recorded here and there that could hint that they were able and willing to do something like this, but to make this a full concerted effort is something really out of left field for their discography. Until the People's Key, where some of that stuff sort of came back.
And I think it's a kind of natural progression. Like, you did literally just say it came out of left field. But I think that...
Yeah.
I think that there is something, as we get into the individual songs, I think there's something that just works really well with their, like, musical style. I think that... Mm-hmm. Something about the tools that they got using more digital means of like mixing and recording and that sort of thing let them play with the music in ways that like can be forgiven because it has a heavier emphasis on computery sounds, if you know what I mean. Like, we'll get into the more specifics later, but I feel like they were able to do more interesting things because in my mind, it feels a little more forgiving when they do weird stuff with like an electronic sound as opposed to like more natural sounding or live recorded instruments.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the elephant in the room is just the fact that this was released side by side with I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. Mm. Which is, I would say, from like a purely Bright Eyes perspective, not Connor as a musician, the most stripped down, the most like natural. So Digital Ash is unnatural in the sense that it is electronic. It's computers. I mean, not every single sound is computer generated, But it's interesting to see that juxtaposition between the two albums they decided to release simultaneously. I know it's obviously hard to live up to the name of I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning if you release two albums at the same time and one of them is a certified hood classic. It's going to be hard for the other album to like live up to that same level of prestige, you know?
Yeah, didn't that one go, isn't that like a platinum album or something like that? Like gold, like it definitely reached gold.
I want to say I'm Wide Awake reached gold. I don't think it hit platinum. Well, I can tell you some things from the research that I did just
now. Oh, please.
So whenever these two albums came out, I'm Wide Awake was number two on the independent music Billboard chart. The Digital Ash was number three. So they both kind of took really, really high marks when they both came out. I want to say that Digital Ash probably got there mostly off of the fact that people were likely to get both if they were going to pick up I'm Wide Awake, kind of like picking up Pokemon games. But here's a fun piece of trivia that I found out. So I said number two and number three, respectively. Guess which was number one for the Billboard independent music chart in February 2005?
Number one. I am clueless here, so I'm going to throw out something that's obviously not going to be it. So I'm going to say, if it's independent, the Celine Dion. Something from Celine Dion.
All right, panel. Is that correct? I'm sorry. The correct answer was actually Crunk Juice by Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. That is not a joke. That is
from the indie? Yep.
From the independent music Billboard chart, Crunk Juice by Lil Jon and the East Side Boys.
Followed by.
Was number one. Followed by I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning, and Digital Ash and a Digital Urn. So there you go. Your next trivia night, you just whip that bad boy out, slam it on the table.
The big three. The Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity.
Oh, wait, can you say the
indie
name of the
music?
What was the name of the album again?
Crunk Juice.
Oh my goodness. We need to make like a playlist where we take all three albums and then we make it into a... We make it into like a long playlist and we have to figure out like a story through line that ties all three albums together.
You know what's like so funny too is like, I guess like 2005, so I would have been 13. So this is like around the time I was becoming cognizant of Bright Eyes, but I was more likely to be listening to Lil Jon at this point in my life than I was Bright Eyes. I definitely listened to Lil Jon at this time in my life. Like, yeah. So how about that piece of trivia to throw out there? One other little fun fact to throw out there. So Lua and Take It Easy as like the singles that they threw out ahead of the album. They were top of the Billboard charts in 2004. So, you know, because they came out the year before. Yeah, so they were top of like the singles chart simultaneously, like so Lua and Take It Easy. So that's like a really neat thing. It kind of shows Lifted gave Bright Eyes the stage, but I'm Wide Awake. I don't want to overshadow Digital Ash, but I feel like I'm Wide Awake was the perfect response to you've given me a stage and this ascent into the mainstream almost. And I know that can be looked down on as like a negative thing because, oh, my favorite band went mainstream. But, you know, it gave them a lot of success and longevity in, you know, what Bright Eyes would continue to do and what Connor was able to do as a solo artist. So we should all be thankful that he made a lot of money.
I think the fact that Digital Ash came out alongside I'm Wide Awake shows that if you wanted to take the cynical route of saying like that I'm Wide Awake was a pure response to, hey, people liked Lifted, let's take it a step further and make something that people would go nuts for and it's going to like fly off the shelves and goodness that that gold record that Connor's been desperately wanting to hang over his bed so he can go to sleep at night, look up and see his beautiful gold record. If you wanted to take the cynical route and say that, then at least alongside that album, which I'm also not saying that's the case, but if you were to make that argument, alongside it comes this other album that is so very different. It's like they're not sacrificing any of their like integrity. They're still willing to like push the envelope, do weird shit, and still come out with something that has mass audience appeal.
Yeah.
But for the record, and we'll talk about it when we cover Wide Awake, I don't think that's what happened, and I think that it's just a good album that a lot of people like because it's undeniably Bright Eyes, undeniably Connor, but it's stripped down and it doesn't have like, you know, a call and response baby and horn and brass horn thing happening halfway through one of its songs. So I think it had a it appealed to a wider audience of people.
Yeah, totally. I hear you there. I mean, other interesting information for this era. So these albums will mark the first time that Nate joins alongside as a true member of the band. I mean, obviously he's contributed on other albums, but like maybe playing trumpet and those sorts of things. But Digital Ash and I'm Wide Awake are really when Nate became like a true member. So it's something to look out for, and because you can already hear kind of Nate's compositional mastermind at work in some of the songs. And then some other interesting personnel. So Nick Zinner from the Yeah Yeahs and Jimmy Tamborello. This is more for me. Like, I feel like I need to say this. So Jimmy Tamborello, part of the Postal Service, Dintel figurine, is also featured on this album. And I think that is also where maybe some of this inspiration comes from, because Jimmy, I mean, listen, you know the Postal Service, you know their sound. It's not hard to see why Connor, or how Connor could have been influenced by him, and especially the fact that Connor appears on one of Dintel's albums as well. So like, co-collaborators, and I think that influence is really cool to see, because I knew of Figurine and I knew of Bright Eyes, and I had no idea that their paths actually crossed. Actually, I knew of Figurine. I gotta give a little shout out to one of our dear old high school friends. Has the same initials as you, but you know, not to dox, you know, this is not a doxing podcast, okay. But
oh, if I know you're there who you're talking and you're about.
yeah. If you're there and you're listening, shout out to you, buddy. I hope you're doing well. That's it. That's all I'll say.
Is that who turned you on to Figurine?
Figurine. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're listening, you should consider becoming a patron.
Oh my God. All right.
I'm a terrible person. I'm just joking. I hope you're doing fine. I hope everything is doing well. I doubt you're not doing fine.
But that being said,
if you are doing fine, you consider throwing some of your expendable income on patreon.com/conscious basement.
Buddy, for old time's sake, come on.
Remember when we would frolic in the schoolyard and you would say to us, "I do say my dream is to give you money one day." Because, you know, you were the transplant from England.
Right.
And now we have that way. We have a way for you to give us as much money as you want.
Remember when we accidentally trashed Nikki's room? You know, for old time's sake, like, the trauma that I've been dealing with, still reliving that moment, I think is worth a couple of dollars.
You really could make up for that, right? Like...
I mean, if it was clearly your fault, and you know,
oh, this person was such a bad egg. I could totally see them doing this. Oh, I could see them inciting such a riot. Yeah, we do. The bit's over with the bit's worn thin.
Oh God, I enjoyed it though. I enjoyed it absolutely. So anyway, that's some of the interesting personnel. So Nate, Jimmy Tamborello, Nick Zinner, as well as, you know, a rest of a pretty regular cast of characters that we've seen pop on Bright Eyes Records up to this point.
It's interesting that it took this long for all those pieces to come together when, would it be fair to say that, like, the introduction of these new elements was seamless? So it's like, if you wanted to say that, you know, he was there the whole time, it would feel right. But then, like, on closer inspection, you could kind of hear when he, like, joins in and becomes a full, ascends to godhood as one of the big three.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, it's hard to say exactly, because I think in interviews and that kind of stuff, they're all very congratulatory to each other in terms of, like, who's doing what. And it's very much of a, we all do a little bit of everything. Like, Connor comes up with this and Nate and Mike kind of check him a little bit. You know what I mean? So it's like a very collaborative process.
I'm thinking about the orchestra where Connor wanted to, like, make it sound like it was coming through a shitty radio. It's like, yeah, I can imagine that conversation. Like, we're spending a lot of money on these people, Connor. Can we maybe, like, let the audience hear it?
Yeah, right. I feel like Nate's contributions could be limited to, hey, we really want some kind of trumpet sound on this track. Can you listen to it and record something in the moment? Mm. And then going from that into the two songs that have the string passages that Nate composed are Down in a Rabbit Hole and I Believe in Symmetry. And I'll get to, you know, we'll talk about those tracks, but I think you can hear the ascendant nature of almost like this getting lost in the sound a lot on those two tracks that would continue into, like, Casadega and beyond.
Yes.
Whereas probably a little less of that before. Not saying it didn't exist, but Nate's contribution to, like, the sheer wonder of the sounds, I think, are pretty clear on this, I'm Wide Awake and beyond.
Yeah, now that you bring that up, like, that kind of, and I'm sure I've used this term before, so forgive me if I keep falling back on it, but, like, that epic, bombastic sound that they go for, and you use ascendant sounds really interesting. I like that, the use of that term here. Was, I think, always there, but then you had somebody with the skill set and the knowledge to kind of bring that into the, really bring it into the limelight and let it shine as, like, another voice in the band, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, like, there's definitely, like, pure musical talent that you can have to be like, you know, I kind of think that this would sound interesting. But then when you combine that kind of, I'm going to call it, like, naive musical ability and have that, but then also someone like Nate, who's very classically talented as well. When you have both of those things, I mean, it's no wonder some of that just kind of reaches a new level once he joins, because he has both the vocabulary, the knowledge, and like the passion, or like the natural gift for it as well. So I think that's kind of where you're going with it, where it did exist before, but there's a refinement now that you have someone that is very like knowledgeable on a lot of that stuff, on the technicalities, I guess.
Right, exactly. Very, very well said. Putting my own words in better order.
Trust me, you'll be doing that plenty later on when I try to say good thing about the word. So moving on from there, I mean, usually we'll talk about themes. I don't have too much to say here, because I think thematically, maybe this could be levied as a bit of a criticism, but it's very one note. I feel like thematically, it very much has to do with just, like, death, which isn't, maybe that's not a bad thing. It's not like every album has to be multiple things that it discusses. But for me, the main theme is death and how to cope with your understanding of it, and, like, when people that are close to you die.
Yeah, in a similar fashion, I thought that Yeah, I think a one potential criticism of it is, for me, big one is just drugs the album, addiction yeah, the right? album. And my big takeaway from Digital Ash has always been that it feels in many ways like a spiritual successor to Fevers and Mirrors. Just in that it has a lot of the same themes and motifs. Like, as you're saying, there's death, change, and instead of maybe like the idea of being in the public eye, now it's more like really drilling deep into that idea of vice. And
right, yeah.
Whereas it felt more like kind of a careless teenager problem, like, oh, you know, I'm having, you know, I need to drink to, you know, forget things, or I need to drink to make things feel okay. And it feels more just like, you shouldn't do that because you're destroying yourself, you're killing yourself. But it doesn't really go too deep into the dire consequences of that kind of behavior. Whereas this album mm-hmm. goes into excruciating detail about the consequences of such actions. So to me, it felt like if you took all of the things that Fevers and Mirrors was trying to do and sort of amp it up and bring it into a more adult setting, mm-hmm. that's as opposed to like the more teenage setting where it was living in Fevers and Mirrors.
Right. Yeah, I could definitely see that, just that expansion on the use of substance, really, just whatever, you know, pick your poison, and how that, like, why you use and the consequences, like you said. But yeah, I mean, so that's the themes. So we were going to talk when we were initially kind of like planning things out. We were going to talk about the EP, but kind of realized there's not much to mention on it. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, Take It Easy, Love Nothing, it will obviously talk about when it comes to the album. This is something I found out literally when researching this album. Burn Rubber is a Simon Joyner cover. And not that it doesn't deserve its love. I think it's a great track, but we kind of feel like we should probably focus more on like Connor's lyrics and, you know, Bright Eyes writing. The song does sound pretty different because of the style that Bright Eyes are going for on this one, but, you know, probably should mainly stick to his stuff. And then Cremation is just like a completely electronic track. Or instrumental track, I should say. But it kind of like bridges us into Time Code because it ends with that heavy breathing in which Digital Ash starts.
Yeah, yeah. I think that after discussing it, we figured we'd just dive into this album. That could be an option for us to explore if you folks want us to go back and maybe do a mini-sode about some of the tracks that we may have skipped and cover some covers, maybe.
So to get into the album, because like I said, Cremation does a smooth transition over into Time Code. We'll do a kind of jagged transition into it. But this is an interesting track because technically it's a song because he does sing. As little as he does, but it is technically a song, which I know that there's great debate whether or not it counts. But I honestly like really love it. I think it sets a great tone for like, okay, this is going to be something new that I have not heard before from this band.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree, and I think that it is one of those songs that I often skip when I listen to this album.
Oh,
and
ouch.
I know. It just is tempting for me because I think it's a good introduction to what sound the album is going for, but the next track is just so good. Sometimes I get impatient, and like a child, I need to skip through the slower burn to get to like the sweet candy that is the next track.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like I almost need Time Code to generate the hype for Goldmine Gutted. Not that like I'm saying like Goldmine Gutted needs extra hype or anything like that. I love the song.
but more hype is always like, good.
Right. Like when he's done singing and the track drops and you just get that like breakbeat, that hard, just like it's just like after that, I'm like, oh, like I'm in. we're going in. I don't know. So interesting. Just different listeners. But that's okay. In terms of the lyrics of the track, I mean, obviously there's not much there. I was kind of thinking about what Ant Hill Law would be. Like, honestly, the best thing I could think of was some kind of like following the masses kind of thing. So like death, data entry, Ant Hill Law. Like, I don't know, some natural order of just like following in line with the pack. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that. I definitely see an interesting play of, and I think that this is sort of a motif that runs through the whole album, is like the natural and the mechanical having mirrors. So like,
yeah,
you know, data entry, computer programming is just you again, one of my other non-fortes. You give a program information and it processes that information and spits out a specific result. And I can totally see a parallel between how a program efficiently breaks down information and repurposes it and produces something consistent and expected with the way like a society of bugs would work. Like,
right.
You've got everything has their role and they work like a machine. And you can make arguments, yeah, like, are people, you know, are we just ants with extra steps?
I guess, in a way, man. Bro, like, what if we're all just like ants with extra steps, man? Yo,
bro, what if we're like, what if we're like in an ant farm, dude? Like, do ants know that they're in an ant farm?
Bro, no.
No, dude. Bro, what if we're the bro. Ants? Who's looking through the glass, bro? Who's looking through the glass?
Through the looking glass.
We are through the looking glass.
So after that, though, too, drink liquid clocks till I see God. Crystal display. Can't turn it off. Like you said, it's the drug album, baby.
Yeah.
You know, I write down a couple of times, embracing the ephemeral. So referencing back on the track, We Are Free Men. So because I feel like a lot of this album is about kind of embracing that short term rush. But like you said before, with a little bit more of an understanding or an eye on the consequences of such a thing. But like, obviously when he's saying drinking liquid clocks, like some substance that's going to alter his perception or his like travel through time. And yeah, I don't know. Crystal display, maybe he is talking about, maybe it is intentional, but you know, obviously again, like an LCD, a liquid crystal display. So it's pretty, he's kind of good at writing lyrics, I think I would say.
Yeah, I think he's a promising young talent, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's, you know, I think he's on the up and up, this Connor fellow.
All right, how do we transition into Goldmine Gutted?
Snare drum. Because that's the first thing you hear when you...
So, Goldmine Gutted. So the first thing I wrote down is like, how can you not just be like, I don't know, like taken over by the sound on the album, you know? Like, just when the drums come in with this, it's just so smooth. It's so perfect. I saw Bright Eyes at Radio City Music Hall one time. It was when they were touring for People's Key, and they played this song, and they had two drummers playing in like perfect unison, like, you know, two different beats. So you really got that feeling of, you know, this is not possible by one person, because they probably did it in like a digital audio workstation or something like that, a drum machine, whatever. And but the fact that they just had like two people just playing perfectly in time, it was such a great experience. And like, I relive that every time I hear this song, because I mean, lyrically, I don't think that there's much that's shrouded in mystery. But I think what takes me away is just like the sounds of the song.
I honestly don't think that they could have picked a song that slapped harder after Time Code. As you had said before about, you know, the song doesn't need that ramp up. It doesn't need that hype. But I just think I like lyrically the song. I think the song, like, as you say, it's not shrouding anything in mystery. There's no subterfuge or anything like that. You pretty much get the story on the surface level. But it's really beautifully told, and the song just, it just slaps. So I like it very much. hot take, I like this song.
One thing that was interesting, I saw it in one of like the Genius comments, and then followed like the link to the like article. But apparently, this song was originally written for like Jenny Lewis and Connor were going to release kind of a little album, and this was a cut from it that ended up making its way on the digital Ash. But it was about Elliot Smith, so. You know, I don't think you could just like replace Elliot Smith as every single like part of the song, but it is inspired at least by Connor's like reverence for him. So I think that's kind of a cool little like, again, like piece of trivia, piece of knowledge.
I would have loved to hear that. Did that project never come together with him and
Jenny? I don't believe it did.
Because I would have paid good money to listen to that album.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. But like, I guess, yeah, the only thing I'll say about the lyrics is that it really does kind of set up the album for those themes of loss, Connor's struggles with the acceptance of death. And, you know, we get a little bit of that kind of like moody, dark, kind of we're hanging out in this dingy little place, and you know, maybe do some drugs, man.
Maybe do a drug or two.
One or two, nothing crazy. Don't wanna go too far with it.
We'll get there though. That's the thing that I find interesting. It's like, this is a really poppy, peppy song, and it doesn't quite get you ready for some of the darker things. Doesn't quite get you ready for the darker elements that are going to be explored in this album.
Well, what's interesting about you saying that is you kind of don't expect what's coming next either with Arc of Time, because this song is almost like an anomaly to me in the entire Bright Eyes discography, and not an anomaly in like a, how did this, like, this is so bad. What it's not, nothing like that. But this for me has been one of the most like confusing, head scratching. Like, why does this sound the way that it does? Why? Like, I don't know. One of those songs for me, I enjoy it. I like it. There's nothing wrong with it, but it has always been a head scratcher for me whenever I go through the album.
I'm curious why you think that. I mean, I do, on reflection, it does do maybe an extreme version of what the whole album is doing, where there are like how you brought up before that, like, to play this live you needed two drummers to be in sync to get that like rapid fire. There's no way a human being is quick enough to be able to like smack this many parts of a drum to produce that sound. it feels like it's like cranking that up to 11 with like all different kinds of instruments and sounds coming together and blending and sort of creating this tidal wave of sound that still flows really nicely.
I guess my question would be like, can you think of another Bright Eyes song that sounds like this?
No, I don't think I could. I'm trying to like rack my brain here.
Yeah, like I'm scrolling through it right now just to see, like, you know, this is for me that like the vibe that kind of like the drumline marching kind of fun beat, most reminiscent of Hundreds of Ways.
I can see that.
But other than that, I don't think much else is like that, like this. And again, this is not a criticism of it, but I've always felt like it was something kind of like, huh, okay. And also like in terms of the subject matter too, I think it's tongue in cheek, but it's also, I think, one of the few times that Connor has been very just like blatantly outward, like, yeah, if you accept Jesus Christ into your heart, you will be rewarded with, you know, eternal bliss in heaven. Again, like whether or not he actually like believes that, I think it's the most like outward and upfront about like, this is the belief that people have. That on other tracks is a little bit more like spiked whenever he says it. This one, it might be tongue in cheek, but it is a lot less aggressive, I guess.
Ooh, I mean, I'm going to kind of disagree with you there because I think this is scathing.
Damn it.
Oh, I think this is scathing. So like, I don't know, the whole line about making friends with Jesus Christ sounds like you're kind of calling to the sort of juvenile nature of like, or what he would imagine to be the juvenile nature of like, you know, making like, if you're just buddy buddy with this cool guy Jesus, like you're gonna go up to heaven and your everything is just gonna be grand and great. And it's sort of talking down to like, or infantilizing what somebody might believe about their faith and what happens after they die. And I can't help but think of the line from Milk Thistle. If I go to heaven, I'll be bored as hell, just like a little baby at the bottom of a well. Like, yeah. This idea of the afterlife is really sort of kitschy and boring and very unexciting. And then it ends with, you know, it's the silly thing of like almost like a school production of what heaven might look like with a chorus and a dance routine. But then the really grim, like, yeah, but you were destined to end up here. I told you the day would come when you would die. So it's just this weird, and the more that we're talking about this, the more that I have to agree with you. Like, this is kind of now sticking out to me as an anomaly in Bright Eyes, just sound wise. And, you know, there's always been the criticism, and as you've said and pointed out, an almost jealousy of religion. But this is like, I think, the weirdest we've seen that relationship explored, where it's both sinister and silly kind of all at the same time. Although, who knows, maybe we'll as we explore more, we'll find another match for this song. But I so far I'm agreeing with you. It's a tricky one.
So yeah, I can totally hear what you're saying, like in terms of this being a very sarcastic, a very like biting criticism, like, do you really believe this? Like, this is how silly you sound. Everyone's gonna get together and it'll be a fun little, you know, chorus line, and everyone's gonna dance together. At the same time, though, I think that, I mean, obviously he comes off as a bit of an ass, but like, so I guess like part of me is like, it feels like, okay, yes, but there's a comfort in that. There's a safety in that. And what makes you think that you have it so good? Because at the end of it too, and throughout the album, I think Connor continues to grapple with that idea of, I don't know what happens, and I feel very uncomfortable about that. But on the other hand, he's like, but look at those people that do think they have it figured out. What dorks are those? So you have both of those things. But I guess kind of the more I think about it, the more I think you're right, in the sense that maybe it's not tongue in cheek. Maybe it's completely like tongue spiked with glass, as he is saying it.
Although I do like your point as far as like, I do think that you can't have that much venom towards it if you have some, and maybe as you say, jealousy isn't the right word, but like something gesturing towards jealousy of like, yeah, it would be nice to have faith in the fact that if I'm a good person and I promise to give up my bad ways and my vices, that there is a private little section of paradise for me. And if, you know, I could definitely see someone being a little bitter about the fact that like, well, why do I have to not have faith? And why do I have to look at reality as I perceive it to be without that nice veil of comfort from religion? With the exception of like some very loudmouth individuals, I feel like if you don't have faith, you're not exactly like constantly bent out of shape about it if it's just something you right. don't believe. But if you were like raised religiously and you like the idea of it, but then you just sort of stop believing, I could definitely see wanting a replacement for it and being frustrated when no decent or comparable one appears. But maybe I'm also like reading too much into the lyrics of some songs we listened to a couple of times.
right. Yeah. So I have two other thoughts here that maybe don't necessarily have answers. Well, one of them, I don't know if it has an answer. But I was curious about why time code comes back in the title of the song. Being, you know, because the full name of the track is Arc of Time, parentheses, time code. So I don't know. I find that interesting. I do think like we've heard clocks and time come up multiple times already on each of the first couple of songs, and a time code being this like a place marker in whatever kind of media, video or something like that, a way to reference and go back to. So I don't know. Part of my thought was maybe it is like our way of understanding our place within a larger system. But I don't know. It's kind of a little bit of a head scratcher. I don't expect you to have like the answer off the top of your head, but something to percolate maybe as we go through. But then my last thought as well is just he explores this more on the People's Key. But I think this idea of on a circuit board, we will soon be born again. I'm kind of wondering if it goes back to like Elliott Smith and those kinds of and having your music sort of keep you alive, right? Because you are born again, you never cease to exist because there is a digital file out there with you on it, with your information, with your music, with your emotions. Yeah, I don't know. But I don't think he explores it too much on this album, but definitely comes up more on People's Key.
Yeah, interesting. I could definitely see a link between the idea of why time code is a like a subtitle or like parenthetical add-on to this song, and that connection between like time code and reincarnation and repetition, especially since, you know, for whatever reason, and wow, maybe why is it that I'm this old in life and I'm just realizing now, like clocks, like analog clocks are circular. And so like just like the very basic way that we perceive time is circular. We count right. hours in a circle. And so I can definitely see like the idea of rebirth and reincarnation being like a thing that Connor like goes back to often, and tying it to very something very circular and secular, like a clock, is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't, I think we could keep going on and on about reincarnation and our theories about time code, but we don't want to fall down a rabbit hole now, do we?
God damn it, Jesse. All right. I guess we're on the next track. So down a rabbit hole, I think for me, like, this is one of those essential Bright Eyes songs. You know, if I am putting together a playlist of the essential Bright Eyes, this is making it on there. I don't know. I don't know how you could tell the story of Bright Eyes in a long form without mentioning Down in a Rabbit Hole. It is, and it's interesting, like, after Arc of Time, like, this is the drug album. Well, this is the drug song.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It is drugs all the way down.
And it's funny that it's drugs all the way down, even as far as at least what I would assume is being referenced here in its title, which is Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
So, which I'm a huge fan of both of the Alice books. They're really great. If you have not read them, I strongly recommend them. And they're public domain, so you don't have to pay anybody a cent to read them. But people have made lots of connections to Alice in Wonderland and references to drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, quite apart from, you know, hookah smoking caterpillar, just the fact that a girl sort of trips, and on this trip, things are getting distorted and animals are talking to her and things are growing and shrinking. You could definitely see that there's some sort of interesting, if you wanted to put on your drug lens and look at at Alice in Wonderland, you could totally see some comparisons to drug use. So even in its very, like, what it's referencing in the title,
again, you know, I've said this a couple of times already, not a criticism, but I feel like that's the only thing that this song is. Perhaps I am missing something to it, but I think this is just like an ode to the trap house. You know, like we like we wake up.
Can we need to rebrand it. We need to call our podcast now Connor's Trap House. And then hopefully we can get like some people that are looking up like Chapo Trap House, and they accidentally click us instead, and then we turn them on to Connor Oberst.
It's beautiful. That's the way the internet works. Yeah, I mean, but honestly, like this is like wake up, you do drugs, you pass out, and you wake up again. And you know, there's obviously something very sad about that, about like, skipping through life and just like numbing yourself throughout it all. I'm not saying that it is impossible to use drugs and lead a normal life, but that is not what is happening in this song.
No.
But I think for me, one of the most interesting things is, depending on if you want to say Digital Ash or I'm Wide Awake, it is like the older sibling. You could say this is Nate's first, the first time we're hearing Nate as the third member, because the string passage at the end, that just like hazy, I don't know, like, what's the best way I can describe it?
I think hazy is like a brilliant way to put it.
Like the, like hazy nagging violin. It's just like, it doesn't sound fun. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound friendly, but it goes on for days and days and days as like the orchestra kind of comes in.
It's both like groggy and droning and frantic all at once.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I think the one thing that I would wrap this song up with is I love the lines. No one ever takes the garbage out. A neighbor kid gets dared to touch the house. He runs back only to announce there's no one home. And then that really interesting effect where, like, everything else is muted and that home is echoed. It just, it kind of adds to the whole, like, there's almost a haunted feel. Like, there's no one home. This is a haunted house that a kid is being dared to touch. There's just something so weird and interesting going on there. And so you can make the comparison that these people are kind of like the Walking Dead or ghosts.
Yeah. And the lines that come after that, like paint the foil with the flame, smear the soda, taste butane. Those are just, those like roll off the tongue, like leap off the page kind of words. As sad as it is, the thought of just like freebasing crack cocaine. But just like there's such poetry in the way that he says it. There is so much heavy beauty. And like there is a word for this. I'm sure you'll tell me what it is, but like a beauty in a disaster. Like what word comes to mind for that?
Ooh, I don't know.
The beauty of a car crash. You know,
I mean, we could go back to like the Sublime, where it's like it's beautiful in a terrible way, like the ocean, or like, or as you say, like a car crash could be sublime. There is a terrible beauty in like the raw destructive force of it, which I guess you could say that there's something sublime about this song in that, like, you have to kind of stare in awe at the destruction of these choices. And not necessarily like, you know, I don't want to say that and make it seem like, oh, this is a choice and therefore these people have deserved it, because I think that's a really shitty outlook. And it's a very unempathetic one, if I'm being frank. But you do have to sort of marvel, like, that slippery slope that these people fell down is like, it's awe-inspiring and not in a positive way. So yeah, I think sublime probably works best here.
All right. Well, thank you, Professor. So shall we move on to Take It Easy, parentheses, Love Nothing?
I mean, I only want to kick it off because I feel like sometimes I avoid or completely miss obvious, like, I look at lines like, first with your hands, then with your mouth, and I assume that there must be something deeper going on here. Like, there must be some symbolism behind this. And then it's like, no, well, if you actually stop and don't jump 20 steps ahead, it's the start of sexual relations, Jesse. That's what that is.
You were reading my mind, because when I was a young lad and listening to this song for the first time, I was like, wait, Connor is talking about the sex?
No. There must be something else going on here.
There's no way. It is the sex. How? How can he put that? My Connor Oberst talking about sex? Yeah, it was the same thing, like coming to that realization of like, all right, dude got laid. But it is obviously, there's a lot more than that, right? Because he talks about like the emotional toll of that, which is kind of cool because you don't hear that in a lot of music that talks about just like casual hookups, you know, of being someone where maybe that lifestyle doesn't come as easy. And it sounds like for Connor, it didn't come as easy until this experience. And after that, it did, at the cost of his dignity. And when I say dignity, I don't mean like, you can't be having premarital sex, like, oh, you're disgusting, you're a disgrace. I mean dignity in the way that he says that he feels cheap, he feels empty. And that kind of loss of something that he had.
I could definitely see, I'm finding the similar struggle that you are as far as how to put this in a way that's like still sex positive and not like try to make it sound as you're saying, like, there's anything wrong with like the idea that you're taking something that you would at some point find like really sacred and important, and an experience that in a sense defiles it.
Yeah.
And then, or maybe more of a way of saying like it, before you've had sex or it's become like a normal part of your life, it kind of feels momentous and important, and it's like this treasured, you know, talisman or something. And then, you know, you're when the veil is lifted and it's just like, oh no, it's just like it just it's going to become part of my life, that can maybe hit you hard. And it's just like, oh well, if this is just like if this is how it's gonna go, I might as well just kind of sink into a rhythm and a routine and sort of take the heart out of it. If you were to like take it into an extreme measure, to be hurt the way that, you know, the speaker of the song undoubtedly was hurt by his or their experience, I should say. There's a lot to unpack in that regard, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I, the one other thing that I want to pull out about the song, because I feel like most of the song is about trying, like, kind of reconciling those feelings. But the other thing I want to mention is the parallel to First Day of My Life, right?
Hmm.
Now they're spreading out the blankets on the beach. The weatherman's a liar. He said it'd be raining. I love how I said raining the way he does. Like the way he sings it. Be raining. But it's clear and blue as far as I can see. So, I think it's really cool to tie those two songs together because of the, you know, the nature of this song that we just discussed and First Day of My Life, which is like the sweetest love song that anyone has ever written, recorded, or heard before. There's no bias in what I'm saying there. So like it's cool to see these two connected, but I am also thinking about this line in terms of, is he upset that the sky is clear and blue? Like, you know, the weatherman's a liar. He said it'd be raining, but it's clear and blue as far, like, it almost seems like he's upset that he found out that it wasn't raining.
Maybe this was intended to be like a one night stand that, and then they caught feelings. And so like, oh, I was expecting this to be like quick, cheap, and we're gone. We're out. And we got sunshine and rainbows instead. Or I did.
Yeah, you know what? I was kind of heading in the same direction as you, that maybe it's tied into like this experience that he had rather than being something about, obviously it's not something just as simple as the weather, but maybe tied in specifically to his perception of the, you know, sex or like, or the after effects of it.
I could see that. And I think like it's to Connor's credit that he packs so much information about this relationship in only a few lines. So like the line, I was a fool, you were my friend. There's so much background information packed into that simple line that if it starts this complicated and it ends with like a lack of emotion or sort of like a deadening or killing of your emotions for certain things, then it makes the weatherman thing seem like, oh, like it draws that connection a little stronger. But I don't know. This one's definitely a head scratcher that we could we could ponder. And we invite our audience to also are we missing something so obvious and you're screaming at your phone right now? Like why are you spending so much time on such a simple concept? You fools.
Well, in keeping with tradition, I think we should probably get off this topic and hit the switch.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
Very excellently done. Yes.
Thank you. I think when we were talking before, you had a little bit extra to say about this one, or like this is one that you wanted to highlight. So I'll just like toss what I got out there and then accidentally steal everything you were about to say.
How's that sound? I'm very on board with this idea.
Okay, cool. So first things first, I'm completely alone at a table of friends. I feel nothing for them. Fuck you, Connor. Okay? go fuck yourself. Don't call us out like this, okay? Do not call us out like this. I really have to say that. The song has so many like quotables, but that relate to that, like self-deprecation, self-hatred, even like a little suicidal ideation as well on it. But I do think it ends a little positive, kind of there is no wrong way or right way. You just have to live. So I feel like it is a little bit of a turning point, hit the switch. But I'm a little wary the cyclical, like with substance abuse and the cyclical nature, like is the next night, is he hung around the toilet again, praying for death? Or has he actually come to like this eureka moment and everything is like sunshine and rainbows, like the weatherman predicted? But yeah, that's kind of what I got for the song. I'm curious to hear what you have.
Yeah, I won't. I'll try not to go, too off the rails and spiraling out of control with this, because this is one of my favorite Bright Eyes songs. And I think like that line that you pointed out, like kind of clenched it for me, as far as like, it's just so, I felt personally called out, by that line. But I just think sonically, it's just such a cool song. And I think if I were to pick a song that, and I'm biased because I like the song so much, this would be the one that I would try to sell the album with, because it's just, it's fun, it's poppy, and it's really dark, like the subject matter. And it just does interesting things with sound. Like, I really like the way the drums are sampled in. And this is what I wanted to talk about for the rest of the album, how sometimes for an eerie effect, like songs will just be sort of shut off or cut off. Where like if it was a natural sounding instrument, it would like echo and fade out as like the sound loses energy. Where like there's a choppiness to it that works with this song's like high energy, and that is coupled with this, as you're saying, like cycle of destruction. But I think it ends on a really positive note, and despite the fact that, as you're saying, are we going to see Connor, you know, hunched at the toilet tomorrow night, back, you know, like completely still off the wagon. But there's also, yeah, that's unfortunate. That's not a great place to be. But if you're still doing it, at least then you're still alive and you still have a chance to like get back on the wagon. So there's like, it's not necessarily a happy song, but it does end on the positive note of, at least I've got this thing that I'm here to experience being alive and being in the world. And maybe that's enough. And it kind of goes back to, let's not shit ourselves. Like, let's just hope that's enough. That just right. Being alive, that just having love, that's enough. And I think that's enough of a good first step to be like, okay, we can acknowledge that. And then we can do the hard work of like, let's get my shambles of a life back together.
Well said, my friend. I honestly don't know if there's anything I can add there. I think you wrapped it in a nice, neat little bow. Yeah, I don't know if you've mentioned it before or I just like know you that well, but I can definitely see, like, I could have, as soon as you said, like, this is one of, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, definitely. This makes sense. It's one of Jesse's favorite Bright Eyes songs. But that definitely could have come from prior conversation. But I'm going to choose to believe it's more of like a psychic connection that we have with one another, you know?
100%. Well, I really like the fact that, like, our relationship has so much symmetry and that we're really just like, we're so synced up. We're so symmetrical.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe in that symmetry, Jesse. Honestly, this is definitely in my top five Bright Eyes songs for sure. I would say, in my opinion, it is the most beautiful Bright Eyes song. Like, Something Vague will always be my favorite song. But in terms of the instrumentation, the music of it, this has it beat. And thank you, Nate, for joining the band and blessing us with this, with it, because like the second half of the song is just like, it's bliss, honestly. And this song in a weird way is part of the origin story of the podcast, you could say, because this was the song that made me realize that Connor was a lyrical genius. Like this was the song when I was, I don't know, let's say 13, 14 years old. I was like, wait a second. Like, I don't think I've heard someone say these things before. Like, and it is specifically the line, and it almost sounds dumb when I repeat it because I don't know, but each quarter note, each marble step, walk up and down that lonely treble clef. It is just like, it sounds so simple, but at the same time, those are Connor's best lyrics, right? Like the really simple ones that hit home because of like the meaning behind them. And it's just really clever too. Yeah. That is the beginning of my gush. I will grant you moments of my time to throw some crumbs in there. But I have a couple other things like for the actual like content of the song.
So I am in the eye of the gush storm. The swells of the waves have calmed, and I burst from the surface to gasp out a few words before the storm comes roaring back in. Yeah, I agree. This is like some of the strongest lyrics. There's just a lot of beauty in sort of a jaded outlook, like the comparing, especially coming off of coming at the heels of Take It Easy, Love Nothing, like, you know, comparing one's sex life and a human's life cycle to insects, and then also going back to time code and having this sort of jaded, you know, we're just insects, all we do is like multiply, and the only thing we can hope for is that like our kids will, you know, inherit the good stuff and keep us going. I don't know, it has that kind of dark but still positive energy to it. And that whole line, the last thing that I want to make a connection to, the arc of time, the stench of sex, the innocence you can't protect, reminds me of Happy Accident. Not yet a mother, but a good complex. You like the boys when they're scared of sex. What a shame that they grow up to be men. Like, there's still that sort of, you know, as much as this guy spends so much time talking about his swinging sex life, seems pretty unhappy about it.
Yeah. So I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the jadedness of it. I think there's definitely like something to be said about equating humans to insects, but I think there is also kind of like a macro picture you can look at of civilization to ultimately say like we do kind of boil down to births and deaths. And I mean, he kind of mentions it in the beginning where the desert is the sand. So individually, we're born and we die, and we're born and we die. But it is like that unity, that togetherness that creates the desert that is on the macro level, what it is to be human and what it is to be a part of our universe, really, as far as we know, the only intelligent life that we have come across. So whenever he gets towards the end of the song and the oh God, I just the oh God, the, I can't even explain how much I love the symphony at the end. But I find it so cool. So this the quarter note seems to only exist because the one that precedes it needs it for completion, right? Because the way I put it was, otherwise it's a melody without the cadence. And cadence in this case being musical term of like a completion. So, but like, so without the next quarter note, without the next thing in line, it doesn't complete. So that those repeated lines of you give to the next on down the line is like this human need for like, for completion, for catharsis, that there is a happiness in death. Because you know that there was a life that succeeds yours and that you've given to something. And I can already hear some people of like my own folk that are like, yeah, what have I ever done? But you have still like affected it, even in the smallest of ways. So that is why I maybe I'm twisting it so it fits my narrative, but like I don't see the jadedness. I just see this as like my ode to humanity by Connor Matthew Oberst. I can't remember. By Connor Oberst.
I think
Mullen. His middle name is Mullen. Yeah.
Confetti falls around you. You shake your fists in the air. Someone comes and drapes a medal around your neck. A batter flies down.
Why do I know that, man? Why do I know that?
Number one Connor fan.
Oh, God.
That's fantastic. So what I'll say is that was beautifully said. And I agree with you. I think that's... I really like how you pointed out the desert is the sand. So like you can look at this big imposing thing and still remember that it's literally the little thing that makes it big. Mm-hmm. It cannot be the big vast desert without tiny grains of sand. I think, yeah, I'm going to stick with my guns that like the comparison with like the insect is like a little unflattering for humanity, but you make the strongest argument that it ends by moving away from that and more towards the virtue and the art and beauty that is what you're saying, the completion of human life. And then that the cycle starting up again with the next one.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I am perfect. Next song.
Well, I mean, you, on the whole, you may be perfect, but you know, it's the devil's in the details, Chris.
We're doing this for every song. We're doing this for every.
I'm gonna break my back trying to get a bun in for all of these songs.
Good luck with theme from Pinata.
I'll have to work in like a quinceañera joke.
Yeah, right. Oh God, now don't get me on people's key. We're having a tough enough time sticking to our run to our time limit. So, devil in the details. I don't have too much to say on this one. You know, I feel like it's almost a little bit of a moment of clarity with all the references to death and heaven on the album, maybe Connor trying to kind of come to grips with his foundation kind of being shaken about thinking of death as just so final. Like you die and nothing else matters.
So my interpretation of this song, and it leads really perfectly into the next one, is that I love the line, "There was love I meant. There were accidents, so tell me which is which." And this song really kind of perfectly paints a picture of how messy and uncertain life can be. And that sometimes it is just a matter of perspective and interpretation in a strange way. And so the final lines, "I'm the first one I deceive, if I can make myself believe, the rest is easy." So like once you've fully wrestled with the fact that there's so much uncertainty in the future, in life, in death, and everything that happens after, you can interpret the world around you. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it kind of ends with, and I might be off base here, but like sometimes you just need to like, in a sense, tell yourself a lie or to interpret the world in such a way to like make it okay so that you can like get through your day. And I don't know, like I think the song is really complex and interesting, and I don't know if I'm off base with that analysis, but it also calls back to like take it easy, love nothing, like love I meant and accidents, and mm-hmm. depending on how you interpret it, you can interpret take it easy, love nothing as either. It was either a genuine show of love and it went wrong, or it was accidental, a huge mess and a disaster. It's all about your interpretation. So that's my take on the song. I'm still wrestling with it, but I think that those last few lines are really interesting.
Yeah, I would have to say that this and Ship in a Bottle are the two songs that I have consistently had the most trouble making heads or tails of. Mm. But I think really it's those lines at the end kind of tying it together with that, trying to find a new understanding of the way that Connor thinks about death, because being so death obsessed has not been healthy. So it's time to kind of recontextualize it. And that's all I'll say for now, because I'm going to say very similar things on a track a little bit later. But that is all I had for Devil in the Details. I don't know if you want to like maybe try to haphazardly put together our thoughts, kind of like a ship in a bottle.
Yeah, but if we knew how it worked, we'd have to grow old.
I feel like mine was weak, but you know what? It's done and it's on tape and we can never get rid of it.
You had one though. I was like floundering around like, how am I going to do this? And like an archangel, you drifted down and handed the baton to me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And now, because of that, you get to tell me what the song is about, because boy howdy do I have very little clue.
Yeah, I mean, this song is weird. This is a weird song. So like I had definitely referenced this in an earlier episode about how like sometimes it's really hard to play Bright Eyes in the car and sell someone on like just playing an album. Because like sometimes you'll get Goldmine Gutted, which is not a hard sell. You could probably play that to most people and they'd be about mm-hmm. it. And then you get the call and response, baby crying and brass band, you know, back and forth. And it's like, how do I play that and not get the vibe that this should be playing in like a modern art museum while like performance art is going on?
You know, it's funny, and I know that that part brings, I'm not saying that you feel this way, but you're totally right. Like showing that to someone is a little like, oh yeah, like trust me, their other stuff is a little more normal. But I know it brings a little bit of ire to some of the fan base. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool, but also like I don't have a baby, so I'm not like traumatized by the sound of a baby crying. So like, I don't know, maybe if you're a parent, you're like, literally my entire life is listening to a baby whine. I don't need to hear it in my music, too. I don't know. It is a hard one to nail down. My best guess was that it was maybe kind of about like the inexplicable, impossible nature of love. Just like the heart wants what the heart wants. Despite the worm in his heart, he's the apple of her eye. But then in the second half too, it's a little bit more of like this cautionary tale too, right? Like, if you continue to dig into my past, you know, you're holding your breath for the rest of your life. And if you knew who I was, you would never grow old. And what I was left like questioning is Connor singing from the perspective of a person, or is this like a riddle, you know, like what gets wetter as it dries, you know, like that question as if you knew who I was, you would never grow old. But like, so I don't know. Is it a concept? Is it a riddle? I don't, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, you could, we could, for the sake of not like spiraling into another hour long discussion about this, to work off what you're saying, like is the speaker of this, is Connor speaking through another character? And is this life itself? If you knew who I was, if you knew that like I am the force of life, you would then literally not grow old.
Right.
And which is like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that's a proper, or at least a very like solid foundation for an interpretation of this song. But like the fact that there is so much life imagery, as far as like, you know, under a microscope, bacteria is breeding, and there's the kind of natural, you know, worm in your heart is the apple of your eye. Like, there's a lot of references to life going on.
By the way, that line before that, every color at once in a column of lights.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. How can you see that and not be like, damn? Yeah. It is a puzzling one. And maybe kind of the way that I'm thinking about it now is thinking about it from the digital perspective, you know, digital ash and a digital urn. We kind of touched upon this, you know, albums and music being relics of people who have passed. So I don't know, maybe he is saying like, if you knew who Conor Oberst was, I could immortalize you in a song. You would never grow old. Like, but that seems like a stretch at the same time, but maybe it's something like that.
No. I think that's the key to it. Because if you go back to Take It Easy, Love Nothing, it ends with, but if you stay too long inside my memory, I'll trap you in a song tied to a melody and I'll keep you there so you can't bother me. That does seem kind of like a direct reference. Like, if you really get to know me, things could go sour between us. And guess what? Now you've got a song. I've Taylor Swifted you.
We just did a live like breakdown of a song.
We did it. Connor, we're coming for your kneecaps. There is no song
we're
that
coming
you can,
for you, dude.
We're coming for you. There's no puzzle box you can give us that we won't dismantle.
Lock your doors.
Lock the doors. Hide the key. We're coming for you, Oberst.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I think we should just not even bother with the transition and scurry to the next song before we get ourselves in trouble with Connor's lawyers.
Yeah, probably. Not because we couldn't think of a transition, right?
No, of course not.
So I have to throw an anecdote in here. It's kind of like the most that I'm going to say about the song. Connor in like the pre-Down in the Weeds, like when the album released, I think if you like pre-order the vinyl or something like that, you got access to this pre-recorded live, you know, quote unquote live, also quote unquote concert where they played some songs, including this one. And so he said that this is based off of a real guy that he knew called Dave Sink that worked at a record store in Omaha. I believe that was called the Antiquarium. This is the amount of research I did into this. Like, I found that file on my computer and I listened to find out. Yeah, so although in the song he talks about like this subject, you know, driving out, I bet you the stars seem so close at the end. It sounds like the person died in a car crash, you know, lost control, fucking with the radio. But Dave was not dead at the time of recording this. So, you know, there is artistic license that it doesn't only have to be about this one person and their experience. But I guess I'm bringing it up because Connor mentioned that the song was kind of dedicated to this guy who had such a huge influence on him politically, musically, and just like growing up. So, you know, also give a shout out to carry on his legacy as Connor did.
Yeah, as soon as the there's that reference to the Socialist Review, it's like, ah, yeah. A piece of the puzzle has fallen into place.
Right, right.
I mean, I do find that surprising. Maybe surprising is the wrong term, because obviously this is a form of fiction. But like, the song even starts out sounding like an obituary. John A. Hobson was a good man. Like,
yeah.
You know, it sounds, not that this is cliched writing, but that like kind of bears the hallmarks of like a funeral speech or an obituary.
Definitely, yeah.
I forgot the name of the song, but it's a great Tim Kasher song where there's a line where he writes his own obituary. Timothy was a sensible citizen. He cast aside his starving eyes for his very own slice of American pie. A sensible decision. I love Tim Kasher's lyrics. But we're talking about Connor. Was there anything that jumped out to you about this song that you wanted to touch on?
I mean, I don't think there's much hidden here. I think it is a song kind of like in reverence of the effect that he had on Connor. And whether the ending is a work of fiction about Dave, or he's blending in stories of two different people into one song that maybe had similar influences on him. But, you know, I don't think that there is much to like unpack in terms of the cracking the code as we trying to do on Ship in the Bottle. But I think the energy at the end of the song is just like spectacular. I love the finish. And like thematically, it still fits, just given Connor's struggle with understanding or coming to terms with his feelings on death, especially with the death of a good friend.
I completely agree. And I think there's also sort of like, there's the line, with all that trash at his feet, the pools of piss in the street, and all of that filthy empathy for the way we're feeling. There's almost like the death of being upset at the world, and like the only way that you could, you know, perceive somebody who is very upset with the status quo is, you know, a filthy socialist who's just going to reject everything and become like a part of the dregs of society. And we get a lot of the Desaparecidos vibes, with the disdain towards shopping malls, describing suburbia as the sickening sprawl. It's past that fenced in grove. A lot of disdain for those kind of things. And actually, I guess sort of like, oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
No. You just clicked something. So when I was researching some of that stuff, I'm pretty sure it said somewhere around like 2006. I want to say is when I think the Antiquarium moved out of Omaha. So I wonder if like part of that, like you said, the screw shop, like fuck the shopping malls and things like that. Maybe Connor knew that they were having trouble sticking around in Omaha, like this record shop that he grew up in. And so it is that disdain because the big businesses are pushing out the like the character of the city that he grew up in.
Yeah, like a death of you know, things that are small for this big uncontrollable, almost like a the opposite of a force of nature, a force of humanity. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, we did our best. We took a swing. We took a crack at it. We did our best.
Oh my god!
I'm not even gonna say it. The groan was worth it. Let's talk about Thief or Piñata.
You got me too. I can't believe you got me.
I feel you staggering from the amount of psychic damage you just took.
Yeah. Oh god. Yeah. Chris is paralyzed and cannot move. I don't know. You made me think Pokemon there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've talked about the song a couple of times, like referencing it in terms of like a very like sappy, sweet, bright eyes song for sure. But what I think is curious is the way he's describing the feelings. Like, so in the beginning, I wish I had a parachute. So he's literally falling and going to hit the ground. Like, what is he going to do? Or he's a piñata and he's getting whacked with a stick. Or he's hiding in the leaves to be hunted and trapped. So like there is this very like, it's very particular the way he's describing it as like this acceptance, right? Of being like, you know what? I'm willing to come out of the leaves, but this jarring kind of violence almost to it, or you know, it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition between like, I love you so much that it hurts almost.
I get that. And what you were saying a couple of tracks ago about cadence is coming back to me too, as far as like, for there to be like that satisfaction in completing a cycle, something needs to end. It needs to sort of return to the start. And it's like, the violence of, you know, free falling without a parachute, or being pummeled as a piñata, or being hunted as an animal. Like, those are harrowing, violent things. But at their death, at their completion, there is something positive. Like, you hit the ground, and I guess the sensation of falling is over. You don't have to worry about it anymore. There is something sweet in the piñata at the end of it. And this is sort of like, you can almost think of it like a mythical hunt, right? Like some sort of magical beast. Like, you know, mythology is full of these things where it's like, oh, if you want to, you know, impress this king or marry this woman, you need to go and hunt this animal that no one's ever been able to catch. And Connor is sort of like putting himself as, I want you to win. I want to be taken down by this love. I'm going to kick and scream, but I want it to happen in a weird way. There's almost like love as masochism.
Yeah,
which,
right.
You know, it does suck.
Oh, yeah, right. And like, I am a little suspect about the fact that this song doesn't seem depressing. That's, I don't know. There's something to uncover with this one. This song may need its own episode as we uncover, like, what is the depression in this song?
Can we submit this to not be a Bright Eyes song because there's no sad feels?
Right. but I think the one thing I will say, this song isn't one that maybe I'm as enamored with when it comes through. So I will say, like, I haven't often given the lyrics much thought, but I do think the last lines are really, really quite pretty. So winter came to Omaha, left us looking like a bride. A million perfect snowflakes now, no two are alike. And so I'm going to go back on that. So like, I think evoking bride at a wedding, like that being dressed in all white, the purity, the potential, right? Get a potential. You're a low to line, the veil between the world and the faceless bride.
Yep.
That's a Connor lyric for all you scrubs that don't know that. But then afterwards it's matched against this debris that is covering everything. But I think what he's saying there is that you can still be pure and pretty and have all this potential, even if you're kind of mired in the remnants of your past. All the debris that we have gone through that is covering us, it can be as white as snow.
So there are two things that I want to say in response to that. And to like kind of go back and repeat, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with having virginity or losing virginity, but like a woman in a white wedding dress, that's supposed to signify that you're a virgin, that you're right. Pure. And like, I don't want to know the numbers. I don't really care about the numbers, but like, since every woman I've ever seen get married is always in a white dress, that could be seen as like, I mean, obviously I have not like seen literally every wedding happen, and not every wedding needs to involve a woman, but like just the fact that like you can assume this form of purity, and just because you wear the white dress, it's like kind of the debris that covers over like a messy life before your wedding. So on this one day, you know, we're going to be pure white and things are going to be happy and wedding bells are going to ring and all that. And that's just like kind of like the snow, a nice veil to cover all of life's, you know, weird, bumpy imperfections in like this beautiful blanket of snow.
God, weddings are so antiquated, man.
It's so weird. I mean, I also completely fine with any excuse to party and drink with the people that I love, but they are weird.
Yeah. Definitely like a wedding in and of itself is like totally cool, fine, fun. The white dress has definitely been removed from that original connotation.
Right.
The pure woman being handed to and
by being her owned father.
Now by her. Yeah. Being handed by her father to the new man that will own her. Very like.
To your
we're getting
daddy.
Way off the. We're getting well.
Here we are.
Off. God damn it.
Wait. All right. So I want to say. I'm going to say one more thing and then we should move on. And we can cut this.
Please.
But I also think it's really funny. I think there is an interesting parallel with, I know debris, it covers everything, but still I'm in love with this life. So I know that for I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning, 9/11 was a big impact on the lyrics of a lot of the songs of that album. And it doesn't escape me that debris covering everything might be an interesting choice of words for somebody who lived in New York in the 2000s.
Right. Interesting.
And I think this is very clearly Connor saying that, you know, jet fuel can't melt steel beams. And so the next and final song is Easy Lucky Free.
Are you done? So easy, lucky, free. This was, I want to say this was like the song. I knew so many people around the time that like, you know, those teenage years that were so into, and this is not, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but like so into the everything of this song. You know, I knew someone who's like AIM screen name was a reference to this, you know.
Oh,
so
interesting.
You know, like, yeah, you know, like it's just one of those. It is in the same way I kind of said like Down in a Rabbit Hole was Essential Bright Eyes, this is Essential Bright Eyes. You know, if you were going to release the best of Bright Eyes, this song would absolutely have a prominent feature on it.
I agree. I think it is one of those songs that more people than I would expect would know the song. And I don't think it ever got like any sort of single release. So it is interesting that it got this sort of notoriety.
It did. it got an EP with a bunch of remixes. So I yes, do want to say that it probably got a single release. But I don't know if it was before or after the album came out, to be honest.
I see. Even without like a single release or like it did get that frankly adorable music video.
Yeah,
with Connor scribbling on a glass whiteboard, essentially.
I learned to write backwards because of that music video.
Yeah, I also like in true Bright Eyes fashion, it ends with another like sweeping epic, you know, closing of this chapter of the Bright Eyes history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it does have that droning and yet still frantic pace to it. I don't know quite how else to put it. It does definitely remind me of Down a Rabbit Hole, like the end, where same vibe, different energy, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, and then overlaid with his screams, or free. Mm. Like, it is such an awesome way to end the album. And I think, honestly, I hear a lot of exhaustion in the song. Like, after spending 45 minutes of runtime, like, trying to understand the motion of the universe, and he's like, okay, you know what? It's time to relax a little bit. We're going to hang out with, my friends. I'm going to live my life. And I think he's trying to tell us that as much as he is himself too, that maybe death is okay. You know, that's a hard thing to get past, like, especially in the US, we are so scared of death.
I agree.
Yeah, we I won't go into the tangent, but like, we even talked about it in a class that I took for my degree. Like, we talked about how just like we are scared shitless of death. But I think so. He's trying to just tell himself that, you know, it's okay to die. And the fact that he has been so obsessed with death throughout so many different albums on so many different tracks, that I think when you get that obsessed, you kind of forget to do the living part of the before death thing, you know?
I think it's not to like turn this into the Tim Casher podcast, the Tim podcast, but we'll workshop it.
I got nothing for you there.
I didn't want to call it like the Tim cast, because that's a very different thing that we do not support on this channel. So, but like, from the same song that I was referencing before, Baby, You're So Worried About Dying, You Forget to Really Live. And it's like, yeah, it kind of perfectly sums up what's going on here. But one of my favorite lines of any Bright Eyes song, but I can't help it now, looking for faces in the clouds. I've got some friends I barely see, but we're all planning to meet. We'll lay in bags as dead as leaves, all together for eternity. And there's something so like simple and sweet and like brave about those lines, like just the cavalier attitude towards like, yeah, I don't get to spend as much time as I'd like to with my friends or with these people that I love, and even though I have my doubts about like religion and the afterlife and all this stuff, I'm still gonna believe that one day somehow we're going to end up together on the other side in one way or another. And I just think that those lines are just beautiful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that is almost like the conclusion. I mean, obviously this is the conclusion of the album, but like the conclusion he has been trying to learn and been trying to work towards, you know, the fact that after losing someone that unsettles you, so you can spend a lot of time looking for faces in the clouds. And I think for Connor, he's trying to convince himself that there's nothing wrong with that, with wanting to feel connected to someone after they die. But then also just the fact that even though he may believe that death is just the end, you still become a part of something greater, you know, like the satellite that destroys itself into space dust, or the leaves falling from the trees. Like, you become mulch, you become that, the debris in space. Like, you still become a part of something greater. So even if we're literally just laying in bags as dead as leaves, we're still together. And there's a comfort in that, even if you don't think that there is a chorus line waiting for you on the other end.
Yeah, in one fashion or another, we end up together.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll end up being the, you know, the daisies and mushrooms when we've returned to the earth. And, you know, there's nothing left of us than what we, you know, give back to this whole cycle.
You know, and Connor, I thought you already figured this out. You know, the desperate are water, we run down forever.
Oh, Connor, God. You need to, you were a sad boy, and we need you to stay a sad boy. Okay? You can't grow or change. We have to keep this podcast going somehow.
Oh, yeah. But it's, I don't know, I think it is a, it's a beautiful message of, regardless of what you think happens, you know, consciousness fades, or you are reborn in an afterlife, there is still something to look forward to. And not in a grim sense of looking forward to death, but with an acceptance that you, I keep saying the same thing, but I think it's because I need that reassurance sometimes. Like, it's okay. You know, it's okay that things come to an end. Is this thing on? Okay. Hey, it's Chris. I'm whispering because we kind of wanted to end the podcast like that because, you know, I said the end and it was really funny. But I'm pretty sure legally we still have to shout out our patrons. Otherwise, maybe they'll come for our heads. I don't know. But big thank you to Eric, Lad, Goldie, Craig. Thank you so much, everyone, for your continued support. We really appreciate it and hope you enjoyed the episode. So make sure you subscribe if you're not already. Check us out on Instagram @Connor's Basement. Next time we'll be going over I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning.